Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to Extra Time with Liam Horobin, presented by Betway, episode 8, I think. Maybe 9, I'm not sure. But today, you're not going to be hearing much of me in this intro because I want to get right into the conversation I had with Ben Steiner. Ben is a writer for MLS, CBC, and Alpine, and a bunch of other people. Like, this guy is just covering everything you want. He's a great follow on Twitter. He'll drop his handle at the end of the show. But go give him a shout. Go watch his stuff. Go listen to his stuff. Go read his stuff. He's got it all. Today, we spoke about Canada men's soccer after 2 games against Curaçao and Honduras. We also dove into the women's soccer a little bit too towards the end of the conversation, just about the World Cup that's coming up for them. And it was great. It was great to talk to someone about the Canadian men's team and the success they've had despite a disappointing World Cup, a positive World Cup, whichever way you want to look at it. They were at the World Cup, so that's a win in my eyes. But we spoke about the 2 games that they played against Curaçao, Honduras, and a lot of the players individually, and how this team has kind of molded itself over the last year or two, I guess you could say. And yeah, it was a lot of fun to talk to Ben. So let's dive into that one right now. Here is the conversation with Ben Steiner.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
All right, we're joined by Ben Steiner from, I was looking at your Twitter bio, Ben. It looks like you're from everywhere, but today I think we're going to have Ben Steiner, the MLS man. Is that right? So we're going to talk about some Canada soccer. And how's the day? How's the day going?
It's going pretty well. I mean, busy time for Canada soccer. Heritage Committee meeting coming up later today. Certainly another chapter in what has been a long-winded Canada soccer story over the last little while. But doing well, and especially excited to be chatting Canada soccer really anytime.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff has just been something that's happening for a bit now, isn't it? So hopefully that can get figured out. But yeah, the Canada soccer, it's been a good couple of days for them this past week, coming back from the World Cup. Like, starting Curaçao, I mean, it definitely wasn't the prettiest game in the world, to say the least. But Canada comes out with a 2-0 win. What were your overall thoughts on that performance from Canada?
Well, they rolled out really their top lineup that they had available to them at the time. Of course, they were missing players like Alistair Johnston to yellow card accumulation and suspension. John Herdman wasn't on the touchline for what happened after the game against Honduras in that June window, where it was just filled with puddles and it was sold out stadium in San Pedro Sula, but a disgusting game to watch, a disgusting game to play, a frustrating game for the Canadian men's national team. When they go to Curaçao, they get the job done, right? They qualify for the Gold Cup. That's important. You don't want to be missing out on that by any means. And I mean, the odds for Canada to miss out on that were quite slim, but still good to tick that box, get the job done. You want to qualify for tournaments as they have now for the Nations League final as well as the Gold Cup. So a big summer coming up for the Canadian men's national team, women's national team as well. I'm sure we'll get to that. But that game, an interesting one for Canada. I think we saw that Ishmael Kone really shined once again. We saw that in the Honduras game as well. And we continue to see Kyle Larin have success that he's had with club. He brought that to the national team, especially this camp. He scored 2 goals against Honduras, 1 against Curaçao, and he scored 8 goals in the last 10 games he's played between club and country. He's the most informed striker in the world right now. He's the most informed striker in Europe. And to say that a Canadian is in that position in a top 5 league is absolutely exceptional. I don't know whether you can have a ton of takeaways necessarily from that Curaçao game. It was played on AstroTurf that looks like it's been played on a community park for 40 years. And small stadium, you can't really tell from the camera angle how well it is, but it did look like Canada was doing well and getting back into their rhythm. The first 20 minutes was rough, but then Canada gets on the score sheet. The 3-man midfield, I like it. The 3-man back line, I like it. A few worries about 2 left feet on the back line, but new tactics trying to work for Canada, and it seems like they're starting to work as well. John Herdman has made it important to still win games. It's not about developing new talent. It's not about developing younger players on the team at this moment. Those things are great. Those things are important. But right now, it's still about winning games. And I think that's an important mentality to instill in the team as well, because you don't want to be going in saying, okay, Victor Leturi, go run around for 20 minutes and maybe you're not going to win the game. Quality player, deserving of a call-up, but maybe you're not going to win the game against a Curaçao, against a Honduras. Remember, Curaçao and Honduras have players from top 5 leagues. They have players from competitive leagues. And so you need to be sending your best players out and instilling that winning mentality. And that's what Canada did against Curaçao. Got the job done, ticked the box, what they needed to do. And then, of course, they did that against Honduras as well.
Yeah, it's true what you say about these CONCACAF teams that Canada had to play. When you look at it right off the bat, you think, oh, well, Honduras and Curaçao, like, they should be able to do whatever they got to do against them. But when you actually look at the squads, there is a lot of talent in there. And it's true what you say about the pitch, too. Like, CONCACAF fields, they're not just going playing in these massive NFL stadiums, wherever it is, right? They are literally going to parks in some cases. But I wanted to talk to you about the partnership of Kyle Larin and Jonathan David. Like, those two, every time they're on the pitch together, they seem to do something crazy. And now they're obviously the top two men up front. What did you kind of see from the two of them watching these two matches?
I think what was interesting in these two matches was the fact that they can play off each other so well. You saw Jonathan David slide back a little bit more, almost into a bit of a false nine, and Larin take up a little bit more of that sort of true number nine striker. And they were able to play off each other. Even when Larin and David were playing perpendicular to each other, they were able to ping passes between each other. They were able to link up with the midfield. I think it comes back to guys like Kone and Eustachio really pulling the strings in that midfield, the torch completely being passed this window from Atiba Hutchinson, who came off the bench twice, to that midfield, Ishmael Kone. Stefan Eustachio allows Eustachio to sit a little bit deeper, Kone to sit maybe a little bit more advanced just alongside him. But that progression of the ball through that new 3-man midfield that Canada has up to the strikers allows them to thrive, allows David to come back, collect the ball, push forward in possession. And that's something that we haven't really seen from Kyle Larin and Jonathan David through the time with the national team. We've seen them play in formations like a 4-5-1, but to see them go into the 3-5-2 was a little bit more intriguing. We've seen them in a 4-4-2 as well, but it hasn't worked quite as well when they're playing right next to each other. But when you stack them a little bit or make them a little bit one deeper, one more advanced, they seem to be able to play off each other. And that's what they were able to do, to really play through Curaçao, play through against Honduras as well. And so while we've seen them thrive for the national team lately by being a singular striker, and we've seen Lucas Cavallini in that position as well, the ability to play off each other is something that's tantalizing for Canadian men's national team fans, because if you can have two of the best strikers in the world right now, and I have no hesitation saying that, given their form with club and country, if you can have them playing off each other and succeeding, that's a potent attack.
Yeah, it's true what you say. Like, it's not biased by saying they're two of the best strikers in the world at the moment, because they truly are. Like, what Lyon's been able to do with his move to Spain is quite remarkable, and honestly turned his season around. You mentioned the formation they did a couple of times there, and one player I wanted to touch on in that formation is Alphonso Davies. Now, obviously, he's a left back for Bayern Munich. For Canada, they need him more of an advanced player. Do you think the formation fits him pretty well, too? Because he basically gets that whole left side to run up and down and do what Alphonso Davies is supposed to do for Canada, right?
I think it's an interesting one with Alphonso Davies, because over the last little while, he has played that free role for Canada. It's not necessarily been a left back or a left mid, drift centrally. He's a creative player. He can drive through those spaces. And again, with Kone, I could go on and on about Ishmael Kone and how he's changed this team. But again, linking up with Kone and Nastakio in the midfield, being able to drive into the spaces, acting as a third, fourth, fifth midfielder centrally is important to this team. So to have him in that free role is beneficial, but it's been beneficial to him showing his quality. It hasn't necessarily helped the team. What I think we saw this window was he was a little bit more stuck to that left side and was driving in that position. He was able to drift forward, drift back, and he was almost in a free roll on that left side. That's not necessarily something we've seen from Alphonso Davies and this national team before, but that's also because he hasn't had a defined role. And I think this window is the first step towards finding a defined role. He's not going to play in the same role every time for Canada. He's too good not to, right? He can play any role on the field. Put him in net. He'll do fine. Like, he can play any role on the field. He's that good. And so I think keeping him to that left side, as he did this window, is important, but not to allow him to take the weight of the national team. He doesn't need to drive to the midfield. You have a good midfield. You have good forwards. He needs to do his job on the left side. And that can be at left back or left midfield or a free role in between there. Because you have Adekubi on the left side as well, who's a quality player in his own right. And so you don't necessarily need that tracking back, that solidity that Alphonso Davies can offer on that left side. You have two quality players that can overlap there and link together well. They've shown that they can link together well. And then you also have a bit more balance now, because Alistair Johnston comes back into the Canadian men's national team from a few months at Celtic. The first time he's been after his stint at Celtic, and he's more comfortable going forward. He wasn't necessarily the best at attacking before Celtic, but Celtic has played him a little bit more centrally, a little bit higher up, almost as a holding midfielder on the right side, right-sided holding midfielder. And he comes back into the right-sided center back role with Canada, and he's thriving there. He looked like a new player in this camp. I think it was a little bit overshadowed by the fact that Lahren's popping in the goals and there's Kone doing what he does in the midfield at such a young age. But I think Alistair Johnston was a new player, and that helps balance out Canada as well, because it doesn't mean that they're always relying on that left side of Alphonso Davies and sometimes Sam Adekubi.
Yeah, and I liked what you said there about Adekubi coming in, and like, he can be on that left side too. And it just kind of shows the depth this Canadian team now actually has. I think there's been some points where it's like, okay, well, Jonathan David's not here, like, who's playing? And now Atiba Hutchinson's come to the end of his career, and Kone can now step into that role, and Johnston too. And I think I'd like to address the back line that they had. Like, there was no Kamal Miller this time around, but the three of them that played there, Kennedy, Cornelius, and Vitoria, were all very, very good for this team. Like, do you think that's kind of true about this team now, where there is layers outside of the starting 11?
I think you can look two, three positions deep on this team at most points. I mean, the question is, what opponent are you beating with, say, your third Canadian team? And you're probably similar to what Canada was 4 or 5 years ago. But they're competitive. There's players pushing for spots. Like, Alphonso Davies isn't going to get pushed out of the lineup, but that doesn't mean there's not more quality players on the left side that can't do a job in CONCACAF, right? It's not the most testing region. You don't need the best players in the world to succeed. You need it to win, but you don't need it to succeed in CONCACAF. And so Canada's deep. I mean, you can go from the back out at goalkeeping position. You have 3, 4, 5, 6 capable goalkeepers. Tom McGill gets called up for this camp, the Brighton U23 keeper. He's been playing in the English Premier League 2 at a youth level. and maybe he breaks through at Brighton. Maybe he goes on loan to the championship. And if Canada has another goalkeeper starting in the championship, well, that would be exceptional. You have James Pantemis, who's fully usable. Thomas Lassalle, fully usable when you're looking at depth option. Of course, Dane St. Clair and Maxime Crépeau right there as backup options. Crépeau, when he's healthy again. Borjan, he's still around, still kicking in the sweatpants. I think that transition does have to start happening. And I don't necessarily think that that's wavering away from the winning mentality. I think Dane St. Clair and Maxime Crépeau are good enough to still win you games. And St. Clair, and while St. Clair hasn't shown that, Crépeau has. So I think that battle for the starting role will be interesting. But you can go throughout the lineup, and there's depth in this Canadian team. Like, Ayo Akinola got a few minutes. And, I mean, should he have gotten a call-up given his recent form? Probably not. But Lucas Cavallini wasn't an option. And there's still depth in the attack role. There's depth at the center back position. Kyle Hebert makes his debut. There's depth in the midfield. Victor Leturi was on the roster. I'm forgetting about Dominic Zator, another center back option. Like, you can go on and on about the depth of the national team at this point. And sure, the level might drop a little bit, but there's young players coming up. There's competitive players coming up. And there's competition for spots in the national team. And that's important given the amount of training sessions, the amount of available time this team has together, and the amount of time that they're really able to track these players. You have a competitive group that is striving to not only have success against other teams, but have success against themselves too.
Yeah, and CONCACAF, you're right. It's not the strongest region in the world, which kind of does give you the flexibility to mold players a little bit more in competitive matches. You've mentioned him in every single question, so I'm just going to ask you a direct question about Ismail Kone, because I can tell you really want to talk about him. What is the biggest thing about him that you think allows him to thrive so much and become such a key part of this team? Like, he's gone to Watford. He's not playing every week, but it's still a massive move for him. So yeah, what do you think it is about him that makes him so special?
He's patient. There's a lot of Canadian players that come through and they're not patient. I mean, you look back a year ago and Ismail Kone hadn't played a professional game. Mm-hmm. He was just starting for CF Montreal. And then he steps into that lineup and he's already patient. There weren't many nerves getting his professional debut, getting his Canadian debut, getting his World Cup debut. He didn't have many nerves. And John Herdman, Atiba Hutchinson, they both mentioned that he's a mature head on young shoulders. And it's good his shoulders are young because there's not many that young in the Canadian midfield. He's, when you watch him play and you watch him get the ball, there's a calmness to the way that he carries the ball. And whether that's driving into a space, a hole in the midfield, as you can see, One Soccer did lo-fi chill beats every Ismail Kone touch against Honduras. But when you watch that and enjoy the lo-fi beats, shout out to Armin Badakian on that one. That was exceptional. But when you watch that, the ability to drive into space, it was something that first impressed me with Pedro Morales and the Whitecaps of all people. But the ability to take the ball, drive into space, stay calm, and then ping a pass perfectly to an outlet or pass backwards and allow Estacio to put it up. There's so many different ways that he just calms the game down when he's on the ball that change the pace of the game, the rhythm of the game for Canada. And so whether that's advancing the ball through pockets, whether that's picking out pinpoint passes or getting himself even in position to receive those passes. And when he gets a pass, he's always in space. He always has his options. And that's something you don't see from a lot of players, especially Canadian players over the years. You don't see that creativity.
Yeah, I guess it's fair to say he's more than likely the replacement for Atiba Hutchinson, who obviously became the most capped player at the World Cup for Canada. So what do you think that transition's been like for the two of them? Like Hutchinson, I think he said in his postgame, like his games are pretty much numbered. Like he knows he's coming to the end of his career. So I guess, firstly, like how is that relationship, I suppose, when the two of them play together? It seems like they're kind of like for like in a way, and they work out well. And secondly, like what has Hutchinson meant to this Canadian men's national team?
I mean, starting off with that second part, Atiba Hutchinson's meant everything to the national team. He's been with the program since the team was ranked 122nd, like behind Niger. Like he's been critical to this national team and he's been committed as well. And I think that commitment is something that we're seeing in young players as well. We're seeing Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David not want to miss a Canadian camp. And Canada is a competitive team now. They're one of the stronger teams in FIFA at this point. That wasn't the case for a lot of Hutchinson's career. You look at some of those starting lineups. Heck, you look at the last time Canada beat Honduras on home soil. It was 2015, November 13th in Vancouver. Kyle Aaron scored that game, but he left the match for Marcus Haber. And Marcus Haber couldn't cut it in the CPL, right? So the Canadian national team has come so far, and Atiba Hutchinson has been there for every little moment of it. And so for him to be able to get a World Cup under his belt, heck, for him to potentially lift a Nations League trophy is magical for him, a magical way to end his career. And so he's critical. In terms of that relationship between him and Kone, I think he's also pretty important in sort of mentoring Kone into that role, into being a star on the national team, being a star in a crazed world football environment at Watford, whether that includes a move to Udinese in the summer as well. There's rumors there of Ishmael Kone moving, whether that as a move to the Premier League, promotion for Watford. There's so many places that Ishmael Kone is going to go. His ceiling is sky high, right? So he can go to the top of the game. He's so young still and already playing at a high level and playing regularly for Watford, not starting every night, every match, but he's playing regularly. And so that guidance that Hutchinson is able to offer, not only to Kone, but the young players, is allowing them to sort of carry that torch, in a sense, that Hutchinson has seen with the national team. It's the stuff that Hutchinson saw with Marcel de Jong, Adam Strait. He saw 8-1. He saw everything that came through the national team over the last 15 years, right? And he's giving that guidance to these younger players. And while I think these younger players would strive anyways, because they're just very good, talented footballers, I think Hutchinson's guidance, especially through this these formative few years, has been really important. And to see him potentially go out with a trophy would be exceptional.
Yeah, it'd be a special way for it all to go down for him. Like you said, all those games, they had the 8-1 defeat too. Like he has gone through it all. I don't think there's many players in the world on an international stage that have kind of had the career that Atiba Hutchinson has had, which makes him just a special player. We've obviously addressed a lot, but I just want to key in quickly on Canada's 4-1 win over Honduras. Was there anything you saw that was different from the game against Curaçao to the game against Honduras? It felt like they almost played a lot more freely and just attack almost against Honduras.
I think at this point in CONCACAF, Curaçao might be the stronger team than Honduras. Honduras is a retooling team as much as you can retool and rebuild in international soccer, but both of them had managerial changes. Honduras seems like they're still adjusting to it. They were missing one of their key players due to visa issues as well. But when you've looked at Honduras in the past and you compared that to the Honduras performance that we saw on Tuesday night, Canada was able to pick them apart a lot easier. Honduras was leaving more holes open, and Canada was able to have those players that can thread passes through to execute in those opportunities. So it's Honduras trying to adjust to what might be a little bit more of a free-flowing style, which could suit players like Romelu Chiodo. You see him just hanging on the touchline the whole game, waiting for that counterattack, waiting to break open the Canadian team or whatever opponent. And so I think you're seeing a Honduras that is in a bit of a transitionary period in CONCACAF. And I think it's disappointing for them not to qualify for the Nations League Final Four, but they'll be a competitive team at the Gold Cup. And they're a solid team as well. And I think with Canada, USA, and Mexico getting those automatic berths to the World Cup in 2026, it should be incumbent on Honduras to qualify as well out of CONCACAF. They're one of the better teams that is still in qualifying. And there's, of course, more spots for CONCACAF as well with the 48-team tournament. Mm-hmm. When you look at Curaçao, they're getting better every window because they get more of these dual internationals between the Netherlands and Curaçao, right? So they have top-tier players from the Eredivisie in the Netherlands. So you get these quality players coming into the Curaçao national team. And sure, they might be a bit older, but they're finally getting some young talent. When Curaçao first came onto the scene, it was an aging team. But now a little bit younger, a little bit more settled into who they are as a footballing nation under the new FIFA rules. And I think they're one of the stronger teams in CONCACAF. I think it might even not be so far to say it's incumbent on them to qualify for the World Cup in 2026, because they're a quality team and one that can push Canada, USA, and possibly Mexico, depending on the day, depending on what Mexico shows up.
So post-game, Kyle Aaron had a quote, which I think some people liked on Twitter, some people didn't like, but he called Canada the big dogs of CONCACAF, or the big boys. I can't remember the direct quote, when he was asked what it would be like to go and play against the big boys. And he said, no, we're the big boys. Is that fair to say, do you think? Do you think Canada are the big boys of CONCACAF right now?
I think it's completely fair to say. I think there's been a lot of Twitter discourse about where the Canavetti is at. I know a lot of American fans still sort of think of Canada, especially younger American fans, think of Canada as that team that was ranked 122nd in the world. Mm-hmm. That Atiba Hutchinson was still on, but a lot less quality players, and were getting pummeled by the likes of Martinique, the 8-1. You can go on about the sad times of Canada soccer over the last 20, 25, I mean, heck, 150 years of the game of this country. But it's never been at a brighter spot on the pitch in terms of talent. I mean, brighter spots off the pitch, we can get into that as well. But Canada is part of the big dogs. They top World Cup qualifying. That's not easy to do. They have the most players playing in like super competitive leagues, not by sheer number, but the most starters. So I think the fact that Canada is doing what they're doing with a population of 37 million comparative to Mexico, compared to the US, is exceptional. And I think that they're part of the big dogs of CONCACAF. I have no hesitation saying that I think that Canada can win and will win the Nations League this summer. And like, I'll go on record saying that because USA and Mexico, that's going to be a bloodbath in the semifinal of the Nations League. Canada, again, should win that game. They are the better team. And so, and I think Canada is probably the best team in CONCACAF right now, given the players that they have, given the form that they've been in this season. I think Canada should win Nations League. I think they're no doubt the big dogs of CONCACAF, but like maybe the best of the big dogs in CONCACAF.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I've kind of had these discussions with people too. Like the way Mexico and the USA, have kind of fallen off their pedestal a little bit, I think that's just a credit to how Canada has just risen so much. And you could even put it towards the laziness of those two countries a little bit too, of not developing players because they think they're a little bit ahead of everybody else. But Canada obviously going to the Copa America as well, which is going to be, I think, just a fantastic, fantastic thing for this country to go and play against the Brazil, Argentina, whoever else they go up against. What are your expectations for that? Because obviously it's going to be very difficult for Canada to go and win, but we've mentioned it a bunch. They definitely have ability to do something. Are you expecting, I think, a more experienced Canadian team now after this World Cup, right? I think they should be okay in this tournament.
They haven't qualified yet. There's still that asterisk there that CONCACAF will be going to the Copa America, but they're not quite qualified. They should qualify.
They should, yeah.
But they haven't quite. If they're going to be the big dogs, they do have to qualify. But I mean, there's still that Canadian soccer hesitation where it's like, well, Suriname, Honduras, El Salvador, like these teams are testing. But the Canada, in all realism, Canada should qualify for this tournament. I will go back and say the U.S. is developing players at a exceptional rate. You have guys like Gio Reyna who are exceptional given, I mean, forget the circumstances around him, but absolutely exceptional players. You have Christian Pulisic, who's playing at the top level. You have Zach Steffen, you have Matt Turner. You have quality players around that team. So the U.S. is on a very similar rise to Canada, and I would actually say right now they're probably the best team in CONCACAF. Canada second, Mexico third. But in terms of how Canada could do at the Copa America, I mean, it kind of depends on the night. Like, can they give a game to Argentina? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Curaçao lost 7-0 in a friendly to them, and Canada didn't play Curaçao off the pitch by any means. So you're not going to win the Copa America. I think that's way too high of a goal. You have to be as good to win the World Cup as you do to win the Copa America. But can you give a solid challenge to a team like Chile? For sure. Can you give a solid challenge to a team like Uruguay? Well, we saw Canada did it before the 2022 World Cup. For sure they can give a challenge to that. I mean, but to see them get tested against the best of the best, to see them go up against a Brazil, an Argentina, those are critical games that the team has to be playing as well. Even if you're losing those games, if you can stay competitive against the best of the best, that is extremely beneficial to this team. And to play those big games, to get that experience heading into 2026, where you want to make a run towards winning the World Cup. You're not going to win the World Cup. Canada's not winning the World Cup in 2026. Like, I'm high on Canadian soccer, but like, no. But you want to be able to make a decent run, especially with such a large tournament, 14 groups, but you do want to win a couple knockout games probably. And so they can be competitive at the Copa America, maybe semifinals at best. But even just playing the group stage games will be incredibly important to the Canadian team and getting out of the group as well. Winning some games at that level, in those atmospheres against those teams will be critical for Canada, as well as getting into big games against the likes of Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah, I feel like this Canadian team is, after what happened at the World Cup, people, it's hard to really judge what it was. Like, I feel like I'm happy with what Canada did. Obviously, you want to come out with a point or something there, but the experience is something. They played very well. And when two of the teams in your group go to the semifinal of the World Cup, it's a lot nicer to look back and think, it's okay, maybe it was a little bit more difficult. But I feel like these next few tournaments for Canada are going to be almost statements for them to be like, no, we are a good nation and we can compete against these top teams. And I just wanted to quickly ask you about the World Cup in 2026. Obviously, there's more teams now going to the World Cup. Like, what do you kind of think of that whole idea of going to a more expansive World Cup and including more teams?
I might be in the minority on this one, but I do actually like including more teams. I think it just creates more buzz around the tournament. And I mean, that's exactly what FIFA wants to do, is more buzz means more money. But I think it's exciting to have more of the world like connected to this tournament. It's about a third of the world that's going to be like in this tournament, connected to this tournament for like a lot of the game, a lot of this tournament. And they're going to have their own nations to cheer on. I think we saw it in Canada where you had people who would cheer for England because their grandparents came from England. And then this year it was like, oh, Canada's the tournament. I can cheer for Canada. And you're going to get that across the world now with 48 teams. I think it's exciting. I hope it's competitive. I think there can be the worry of the likes of sort of USA Thailand at the Women's World Cup when it's just completely blown out of the water. And I think that's potentially a concern for this Women's World Cup as well, coming up this summer, where you have the 32 team tournament. And are there 32 competitive nations? The women's game is rising, but I don't know whether the top teams and team 32 are necessarily at equal levels or even competitive levels. And I think that's something that you will see in the Men's World Cup, because the 48th team is not going to be the quality of the 10th team. And they're not going to be the quality of the 32nd team that would have qualified regularly either. So it's exciting that a lot of teams are in it. I think it's going to be cool to follow. It's going to be cool to watch. There's a lot of games. It's in a very cool location with Canada, US, and Mexico. But there could be some blowouts.
I think I'm with you. Like, the World Cup didn't start with 32 teams, right? Like, eventually all had to grow and get to where it is today. And I think the conversation around it is because of how good this last World Cup was. It's like, oh, well, why would you want to change it? And it's like, well, football's getting a little bit better. There's more players around the world. Like, Norway never make the World Cup, and I'm sure a lot of people would want to see Holland at a World Cup, right?
So exactly, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's so much talent around the world now, and so many teams have it. I do like it. Like, the European Championships expanded a little bit more, and I think it's a perfectly fine tournament with good competition. So it'll be interesting. But you mentioned the women's there too. Obviously, the World Cup is coming up, and Canadian women's soccer is been going through a lot on and off the pitch. Can you just kind of give an idea of where that's all at the moment, and also maybe what the expectations are for the World Cup for the women?
Well, the expectations for the World Cup for the women, I think, really changed over the last little while, because you have so much of the off-field situation going on with the labor dispute, which also involves the men. The men are equally as involved in this as the women. But you had Janine Becky get injured in preseason with the Portland Thorns in the NWSL. And she's going to miss the World Cup, a season-ending ACL injury. So that's a critical player for Canada that's now out of the picture. And there's not necessarily a lot of depth that can step in at Janine Becky's position. Bev Priestman has said that the winger depth is simply not fantastic for Canada, especially when you look at, like, Deanne Rose is injured as well. Like, Nichelle Prince can play out wide, and she's injured as well. Like, you can push Ashley Lawrence up, but at that point, what are you giving away on the back line type thing? So the depth isn't necessarily there. And I think that's a greater issue with Canada not having a league, players starting to take other nationalities as well, losing out on dual nationals. But the off-field situation as well is, we saw a complete distraction for the national team. We saw that at the She Believes Cup, where Canada didn't quite have the performance that they were hoping. Maybe a unifying performance against the US, their first time wearing purple and going against an American team that went through a similar fight with the U.S. Soccer Federation in terms of equal pay and CBA. But Canada didn't quite have the tournament that they wanted to at that. And they only have one game in a two-match April window as well. They're only playing France, and that's going to be a testing game. But that's a French team going through a lot of turmoil itself. Wendy Renard, one of their top players, resigning from the national team, retiring from the national team. They're going through a managerial change as well. They're at odds with their federation as well, going through a similar fight. But Canada Soccer and the women's national team players, well, the women's national team players in particular, have never been more unified as a group, because they're making this fight against the federation, trying to get more money, get pay equity in terms of men and women, but also just create a better atmosphere for the Canadian soccer player, man, woman, whatever gender, just create a better atmosphere and a better environment to grow up in the game. Because I don't want to get too much into the weeds in terms of the Canada Soccer business deal. Effectively, for those who haven't heard of it, it's Canada Soccer signed away all of its media and marketing rights to a separate company called Canadian Soccer Business. And they get a $4 to $5 million stipend, one payment every year. And that's it. So all these sponsorships you're seeing, Carlsberg, Gatorade, you can go on about all these sponsorships that Canada Soccer is getting. That money is going to CSB, which then helps fund the Canadian Premier League, which is also critical. There should be a women's league. You can go on. But having that deal amended in some way and adjusted, having a little bit more money funneled towards the national programs all the way down to grassroots soccer in this country is critical, because you need that, those environments for the Canadian players growing up. You need those environments for the top Canadian players to succeed as well. And that's something that we saw with the men's national team last year. We saw them taking charters and private jets. We saw them with exceptional accommodation wherever they went. And we're not seeing that with the women. The women are still flying on economy for a lot of their flights. So that needs to be equitable. The men and women at the top level need to be equitable, but Canada Soccer just across the board needs more funding, more money to just run the programs, the youth programs, the national programs, the grassroots programs at the level that they need to be to continue Canada Soccer's rise and not just rely on sheer talent and finding diamonds in the rough like an Alphonso Davies, like an Ishmael Koné.
Yeah, there's a lot to digest of it, to be honest. Like, I've tried to read as much as I can and get into it, but that was a good explanation of it. And it's a very interesting situation, because there's not many countries around the world where the women's team is the more dominant team, and the one people can probably, up until maybe this last 12, 18 months, like, recognize their players a little bit more, right? So on the field, let's just, we'll kind of end on this. Like, is there somebody in the Canadian women's team that you think now is maybe this next generation that's going to take over the Christine Sinclair kind of thing? If anybody can take over Christine Sinclair, I know she's pretty much irreplaceable.
I mean, all-time leader in international goals. She's been exceptional for Canada. Like, there's not really anybody who can replace her in terms of maybe recognition.
Yeah.
But in terms of importance to the national team, I think it's on Julia Grosso and the success that she's had with Juventus in Italy. She's bound for a big move at some point. There were links that she might have gone to Manchester City in the WSL. But I think she's critical to this team. She's a little bit less attacking. She's not going to put up the numbers like Christine Sinclair did, but in terms of a attacking midfield linchpin, Julia Grosso is absolutely critical to the Canadian team moving forward. And I think she can be a face of the national team as well. I mean, she scored the gold medal winning penalty kick at the Olympics, right? So she's already got that recognition at such a young age, at such a young point in her career, that she's kind of the next bright shining light for the Canadian team. And then there's also incredibly important players like Quinn, and they've been exceptional in their role with the Canadian team. You look at Ashley Lawrence and the level that she's reached. You can go kind of across the board, but in terms of a player that can sort of take that spotlight of Christine Sinclair as maybe the next captain of the national team per se, I do think that Julia Grosso is sort of the top player of that next generation of players.
Well, I'm really excited for the Women's World Cup, especially after the men's and how exciting that was. And now this one will actually be in the summer, which is exciting too. So, Ben, where can people find your work? And do you have anything coming up soon that you would like to tell people about?
You can find my work across CBC Sports, across Alpine Canada, MLS now for Canada Soccer stuff, a whole bunch of different places for that. But if you want to follow all my work, Twitter is a good place to do that, as long as that's around at BenSteiner00 on Twitter. For now, I'm verified. A couple days, won't be anymore, but I'll be on Twitter still at BenSteiner00. So you can find pretty much all my work there.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Ben. This was very informative. I think for people who maybe even didn't watch the games, got a really good idea of what happened over Canada's across Canada's two games, and obviously what's going to happen this summer for Canadian soccer. So thank you very much for jumping on with me.
No problem. And it's the big Canadian soccer summer coming up, World Cup, Gold Cup, and Nations League. So have fun. Try and get out to some games. I know that Nations League is in Las Vegas as well. So what a destination that is. But thanks so much for having me on.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.